Hi, today we're going to look at the remarkable rise of private education in India. Let's begin with a brief history of education in India post-independence. A whole bunch of reasons came together to de-emphasize primary education. Gandhi, for example, somewhat surprisingly, was not a big proponent of literacy. Gandhi said that literacy is neither the end of education nor even the beginning. Instead, Gandhi extolled village life and promoted village skills rather than literacy. In addition, literacy for the lower castes was seen as sacrilegious in some regions. The untouchables, for example, were not supposed to even read the holy books, and one way of preventing them from doing that was by preventing them from reading. Schools were divided by caste and so forth. In addition, the powerful landlords in the rural regions didn't really want an educated workforce. What was most complementary to land was uneducated labor. So these certainly did not push for the uneducated masses to become literate. There's an interesting contrast here with China, where in China both Confucian and Marxist ideology promoted literacy. Under Nehru, primary education was also de-emphasized, but for a different reason. Nehru had a vision of India as a socialist, industrialized power. This was despite the fact that in 1951, India was 90% rural, life expectancy was 32, the literacy rate was 16%. Nevertheless, the vision here was the Leninist vision of taking control of the commanding heights, of cooperatives plus electricity being equal to socialism. So there was lots of investment in the temples of concrete, dams and steel and aluminum plants and so forth. And Nehru built universities for engineers, the IITs. In fact, as much was spent on universities as on all of primary education. Ironically, the Swadeshi movement to make India independent actually benefited most probably Silicon Valley, as a lot of the engineers educated at the IITs came to Silicon Valley. Although not a lot of money was spent on education, a lot of money was spent on the teachers. The teachers and the teachers' unions are incredibly powerful in India. The Indian Constitution, in fact, gives the secondary teachers the right to elect 1/12 of the members of the higher upper office of the state legislative councils. Teachers can in fact hold office and can be teachers at the same time. Now, can you imagine a principal trying to fire a teacher for absence when that teacher is a member of the state legislative council? It's going to be really hard to do. In fact, Kingdon and Teal find that the students of teachers who belong to the union are actually more poorly educated than the others, perhaps because absenteeism is so much higher for these powerful teachers. Indian teachers, in fact, relative to GDP per capita, are very, very highly paid, among the highest paid in the world. And the teachers' unions are among the largest unions in India. Teacher absenteeism is shockingly high in India. On a typical day, 25% of the teachers simply cannot be found. And of those teachers who are present, only half of them are actually doing any teaching. Moreover, it's the older teachers, the more educated teachers, the head teachers, who are more frequently absent. These are the ones who have jobs elsewhere and are simply using their, quote, teaching job as a perk. By the way, this picture is from the Poverty Action Lab. They're doing an experiment which uses cameras to take a daily picture to show that the teacher is actually in the classroom and giving teachers incentives to actually show up if they can prove that they were there. This program has been very successful in cutting absentee rates almost in half. So traditionally, the majority of government schools in India were ignored, underfunded, and ineffective. However, the demand for education was quite low. A large majority of the population was agricultural and were just doing traditional things which had been done for thousands of years. Then in 1991, there was an economic crisis, followed by economic liberalization. There was a dramatic ending of the license Raj. And because of this, Indian growth rates began to increase quite dramatically. This had a profound effect on the market for education. Greater economic growth stimulated the demand for education. The government schools, however, were slow to respond. Instead, we had the rise of private schools. this increase in private schools was geared towards the poor. There were millions of small, tiny schools in the slums of the major cities of India. Tuition on average was $2 a month. Free tuition was common. The facilities in these slum schools tended to be of low quality, but nevertheless were higher quality than in the government schools. The new economy of the 1990s was based on the export of services, and understanding English was a very valuable skill which the people wanted. The government schools, however, were often teaching in the local languages for politically correct type of reasons. In fact, historically, English teaching has been banned in many states. And in fact, this remains a populist issue today. Here's a recent Sunday Times of India headline. SP vows to abolish English, computers, thus combining language Ludditism and technological Ludditism. In the words of one commentator, we have an English language economy, but our education policy has denied people access to it. Because the government schools were not teaching in English, this provided a reason for expansion of the private schools. So in Hyderabad, for example, less than 1% of the government schools were teaching in English, but 80% of the private schools were. In East Delhi, 2.8% of the government schools teaching English, but 32% of the private schools. The aspiration, the use of English as a language of aspiration, had a religious component to it, not just an economic component. So the Dalits, for example, had often seen the Hindi language as the language of oppression, as the language of caste, and they preferred to use English as a language which united them all across the nation. So English was truly the language of aspiration for both economic and religious reasons. The private schools, although built in these slums, although having very poor facilities in an absolute sense, tended to have better facilities than the government schools. So teachers were less likely to be absent. They were more likely to have drinking water at the schools, to have toilets at the schools, to have blackboards, to have desks, to have electric lights, and so forth. For all of these reasons, private schools began to explode in popularity. In fact, by 2004-2005, 27% of the primary age school children in India were in private schools, about 20% in rural regions and 50% in urban regions. These numbers are, in fact, a little bit higher today. Over half of the children in urban regions are in private schools, mostly these small, low-tech private schools in the slums of India in the big cities. It's incredible. Comparing the public schools to the private schools, what we see is that the private schools had better educated students. So in a test of reading, almost 50% of the kids in the private schools could read a story, but only 28% of the kids in the public schools. 5% of the kids in private schools couldn't read at all. 11 or almost 12% could not read in the public schools. We see the same thing when we look at arithmetic. So in the private schools, 33% of the kids could do a division problem. In the public schools, only 18% of the kids could do a division problem. 10% of the kids in the private schools couldn't work with numbers at all. 20% of the kids in the public schools could not work with numbers at all. So the key question here, of course, is, are the schools different or are the students different? Perhaps it's the case that the private schools are no better at teaching these subjects than the public schools. They simply have better prepared students. Do the private schools, in other words, cream skim? Do they take the cream of the public school students for themselves, and that's the reason they have better results? That's the question we're actually going to look at in the next video, based on a paper by myself. Here's some further reading, including my paper on cream skimming, which we're going to talk about in the next video. James Tooley has a lovely book called A Beautiful Tree, talking about private education for the poor, not just in India, but around the world. Tooley and Dixon and co-authors have looked at private schools and public schools in different regions of India. Here's the Kingdon and Teal paper, which looks at teacher unions and the effect on student performance. And also Nindan Nilekani, in his book Imagining India, has a very good section on the rise of private schools. Thanks.